I'm very pleased to welcome back to View from the Roundhouse Professor Martin Drum from Notre Dame University. And I must say, Martin, I'm also happy to welcome myself back after 6 or 7 weeks on a Frio activation tour of Italy and Spain. And it's good to be back in Frio, and it's good to be talking to you ahead of the big day on the 5th of November coming up. How are you?
I'm very good, and I want to thank Anna Besser, one of our journalism students at Notre Dame, for all of her work in previous iterations during Michael's absence for very, very good reasons. But it's fabulous to be back here. Fabulous to welcome you back, Michael. And don't we have a big topic today?
Well, Anna's probably gnashing her teeth that she can't be here to fire all the big questions at you today. But yes, a big shout out to Anna. I hope to invite Anna back so the two of us can pepper you on another occasion, Martin. Let me commence today, though, by saying it's just after 8:30 in the morning in Fremantle, Western Australia. So it's just after 8:30 Thursday night in Washington, D.C., and earlier times as you go across through the Midwest, across to California and go north to Alaska and further west eventually to Hawaii, not to mention some of those funny little islands out there where the Americans have territory and voting citizens. So we're not really going to know the results of the upcoming US presidential election and all the associated elections until well into our Fremantle breakfast time next Wednesday, Martin. People will be driving to work, and it's a funny business, isn't it?
It is, and it's going to be really entertaining. So it's on Tuesday US time, and they're closing, well, this is a whole story in and of itself. They're closing around about 7 p.m. in many states. Now, it varies enormously. We might come to that at some stage, but let's assume around about a 7 o'clock start, finish, and voting to count, begin counting soon after. That's going to equate with a 12-hour difference to around about 7 a.m., and it's probably mid-morning when we start, the picture starts slowly emerging, particularly down the East Coast, as to how the different, the two candidates are tracking for the presidential election. But I think, as you've pointed out, if you're waiting on Alaska and Hawaii, and I should say, I think I'm pretty confident what's going to happen in those two states, you'll go well into the afternoon our time.
Martin, we should remind all of our listeners that we are, in fact, talking today about the US elections. It starts at the top of the president, but there's all sorts of other elections. I was in Atlanta on one occasion when there were some elections going on, and people had, you know, a dozen or more voting flags and sticks and placards out the front of their homes. There were school boards, there was state governors, there was the deputy sheriff, as well as big election things going on. What, when they head down to the polls, will a lot of the people be voting for in the states apart from the US president?
They vote for all manner of things. I've seen ballots which have 30 plus elections, which is just astonishing how people probably concentrate that long. I'm not sure. But there's also a lot of other things going on. The ballot rules are largely predicated on state legislatures and how they set them. And they can vote for all manner of things. They vote for a lot of their judges, Michael, which is, I don't think, a great thing on the whole. But they also vote for everything, as you say, for deputy sheriff, all manner of particular officers up and down the ballot. And they also vote for special provisions, special ballots. So, for instance, if you want to drive out people to the polls and you're not sure how to, you'll pop in a question that might animate them. And so there's marijuana legalization, there's abortion, there's all manner of different things that end up on the ballot. And cynics might say that they're somewhat of a measure to drive people to the polls in different directions. So there's a lot of things going on. Many people will turn up, just fill out the presidential, because it's all optional, fill out the presidential or the Senate and Congress and then disappear. So there's much lower voting patterns for some of the down ballot provisions.
Well, we'll come to the US congressional elections as well, because every president needs to have a friendly or friendly enough House of Representatives and Senate. There's also, as I think we have here and I have there, early voting. Martin, what's the early voting position for the president?
Well, again, that varies enormously from state to state. So some of them have been in the field for a month, others have very short early voting periods, and then the criteria you need to satisfy differs enormously as well. So most states have been open for some time, and the early voting figures are quite strong. They went up markedly during 2020, unsurprisingly, and they've during COVID, and they've increased, they've continued to rise since then in midterms and elsewhere. People, once they get used to voting early, and remember you're talking about voting on a Tuesday in the US when a lot of people are working, once they start voting early, they often keep voting early. It used to be the prerogative of the Democrats, and in the last election the Democrats pushed it hard and actually got a fair margin on the early votes, and that was part of the contention. Because the on the day votes were counted first, they leant more Republican, and then the early votes and postal votes were counted later, that leant more Democrat. But that was totally in sync with what their campaigns were asking their supporters to do, but it fed into a Trump narrative that the whole election was stolen.
Well, it might benefit Kamala Harris if her people or people who wanted to vote for her and did vote early and didn't hear Biden use the word garbage in his language and mightn't have been put off by it. She might possibly get the benefit of it. We'll come back to that particular utterance. I guess that's the sort of thing that happens in any election campaign anywhere, Martin. But what are the polls at this minute telling us? They're flicking around here and there, and but people like you just love it. You're probably bored and having a few
Oh, look, they have
cigarettes.
been fascinating. They've been fascinating, Michael. Look, the overall national polls have been, of late, about a 1 to 1.5 point lead for Harris. That might sound good for her, but she was at about 3 about a month ago. So that's declined slightly. And generally, the assumption is that you probably need, if you're a Democrat contender, about a 3 or 4 point lead in the national poll because you don't do quite as well state by state. The Republicans have a bit of an edge with the way the Electoral College has been set up. So there's every possibility that Harris could win the national vote and lose the election.
And Martin, what do you make of the polls yourself at the moment? Do you take them super seriously, or do you think there's a plus or minus margin for error that makes them a bit meaningless?
I take them into consideration. I don't think they're meaningless. I don't think they're so tight that the margin of error is such that you can't 100% predict what's going to go on. I would say they're a bit of a yardstick. They've tended to slightly underestimate the Trump vote, both in 2020 and in 2016 in particular. So the fact that Trump's level pegging probably puts him in a reasonably strong position. Because if that's the history, the other possibility is the polls have corrected themselves, knowing that that happened in 2016 and 2020. A lot of them have little ways of tinkering to try to average out, say, a lack of access to Trump supporters.
Martin, we keep being told, and you and I and Anna have spoken about this over the last number of months, and we've been tutoring all of our listeners who weren't previously aware about the swing states. You could think, on one view of things, that no one else needed to vote. You give it credit for red and blue in different states, but it comes down to the swing states. Do you reckon that's the case? Are you still a swing state man in all of this? Is it totally dependent on what they do? And who are they? And where do they stand?
Yes, I'm a believer in the swing states. I think that the data and the facts are pretty clear here. If you don't win the battleground states, you don't win the election. The United States public is a very divided mob. There's a fairly consistent group of 40 to 45% that will vote Democrat and 40 to 45% that will vote Republican, and a good many of those states that are already pretty much locked up we can be pretty confident which way they fall. And you'd have to ignore 50 or 60 years of electoral history in the United States to have any different opinion on that. So it will come down to how those battleground states vote and who's able to pick them off. And the numbers in those states are very tight in many cases.
Martin, we I think probably adopted an American expression about bellwether seats, bellwether states. Of course, some of the early results in the US come out of New England, and people get excited because someone got 500 votes versus someone else's 122, and all that sort of thing. The Marianas way out there in the Pacific will probably register 20 versus 3 or something. Who are the sort of considered to be the crystal ball gazing states? You look at their results and you think this is where it's going.
Well, I'm going to start with Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is the has the most electoral votes of the states that are really up for grabs. And it's actually the tightest, probably, or one of the very tightest in terms of the polls. The aggregate polls probably shows Trump by about 0.5%, which is, you can't be certain of that result at all. So unsurprisingly, you're getting both those contenders appearing in Pennsylvania. It's worth 19 electoral votes. It's pretty difficult for Trump to win if he doesn't win Pennsylvania. Kamala could still win without winning Pennsylvania, but it's hard. I think that's a particularly important state and particularly tight. There's a few other states. Michigan is very tight. That's worth 16 votes. And that's very narrowly leaning towards Kamala Harris. Wisconsin, narrowly leading towards Harris. North Carolina leaning towards Trump. Nevada's worth a lot less votes over in the west of the US. It's only worth 6, but it's pretty much even in all of the polls. There's four or five that all of your punters will want to watch very closely on the night, Michael.
And those results will come through relatively early, particularly where the Liberty Bell is in Pennsylvania. Martin, I see on the New York Times homepage right at this minute that there's been a big new celebrity endorser for Kamala Harris, LeBron James. We've touched on celebrities before, and I guess there'll be more of them coming out, but I guess it could change somebody's vote along the way.
Oh, look, I'm one of those people who's a bit cynical about celebrity endorsements. I think people admire athletes or singers, but I don't think that really has a big say on how they vote. LeBron James has been a known Democrat supporter for a long, long time. I think we know what his colours are, and we've seen plenty of instances where there's lots and lots of endorsements, and they don't appear to have made a material difference. Occasionally, unexpected political endorsements can help. And Kamala Harris has lined up some disaffected Republicans, such as the daughter of Dick Cheney, the daughter of now 2000 presidential 2004 John McCain,
Yes.
Senator McCain. People like that, I think they're interesting. I think they rev up the mob on either side, gee them up, Hulk Hogan for Trump, and Beyonce for Kamala Harris, etc. But do they change swinging voters' minds? I'm still a little bit skeptical, Michael.
Martin, I mentioned, as did you earlier, Hawaii and Alaska, the two last states to come into the Union from memory, long way from Washington, and there's big gaps of other countries or ocean between the mainland and those two places. Have they ever mattered in the outcome of these sorts of presidential elections, and are they likely to matter here?
I think that if you're a Republican hoping to win Hawaii, you're in a mess. And if you're a Democrat and you're hoping to win Alaska, then all the prayers probably won't save you. I'd be very surprised if Alaska doesn't vote Republican and Hawaii doesn't vote Democrat, Michael. So if you're holding out and you haven't won, and you're holding out one of those states flipping, to use the US terminology, I think you're on a wing and a prayer.
And the other point, of course, Martin, is they've got the college where the states send their delegates to put their hands up, and Hawaii and Alaska presumably only get a couple of hands to go up in the college.
Yeah, they're both very lightly populated, so they don't get big numbers in the Electoral College accordingly.
Now, I make passing reference to what one might call Biden's blunder. I've only seen occasional couple of little snippets of it on the television. I couldn't actually understand what he was saying, to be perfectly honest. And it, for me, just emphasised why it was important that Kamala Harris be running for the Democrats. And there's been various versions of what he said, but it doesn't really matter. The only thing people know from social media, live television, and all of the newspapers is that he seems to have described or implied that all Republican voters are garbage. What did you make of all of that? Is it the sort of thing that I'm sure it's the sort of thing that Kamala Harris wished he hadn't said?
Yeah, I don't think it helps. I think we can overemphasize small gaffes and things like that, but I think it doesn't help. And the reason is this, that you can't be too arrogant and dismissive of people that don't agree with you. And Hillary's comment on, calling Republican support Trump supporters deplorables in 2016, I'm not blaming that for the whole result, but I don't think it helped. It was, it sort of fed into a narrative that she was arrogant and dismissive. And I think there's a danger that Biden's done the same. Biden's comments were pretty garbled, I agree. When you listen to Biden, you can see why they needed to change, because his comments were pretty much incoherent at the time. And it genuinely is a liability. And I might come to that when I'm talking about the result, because the attack that in an environment where people are unhappy with government, having Biden close to Harris has probably not been that helpful.
We talk about early voters. Is there any indication, or what's your guess, I suppose? How would you speculate about the size of the voter turnout for this election?
I think the voter turnout will be pretty good by US standards. So I think they'll be around about 60%. It may not be quite as high as last time. Last time we had record numbers come out to vote in the US. So it might not be quite as high as that, but it might be around the mark. I think that, it's been wall-to-wall coverage for weeks, if not months now. And there's a lot of emotion and energy around the race. So I think that they'll get a reasonable turnout by US standards. Whether enough people, I mean, this is what's different, fundamentally different about the US to us, is that the enormous effort that's put into getting your own people to vote for you and energize your own base. That's something that's clear in the US, but it's not very relevant in Australia, where you have to vote.
Martin, we could take him in either order, but let's go with Trump first. How do you rate his campaign? I mean, there's 4 clear days from when they all wake up in the US tomorrow morning before the vote on the 5th. But how do you rate Trump's campaign to this point?
Well, Trump is Trump. He's not going to change who he is. So he's still going to ramble. He's still going to say outrageous things at times. He's not going to be different to who he is. But his campaign, I think there's a bit of a difference. There's more discipline in his campaign here than last time. And the campaign itself has worked to pivot Paris, to paint Harris as more of the same from Biden, a continuation. That, I think, has been probably the single most effective thing coming out of the Trump campaign, because if a lot of people are unhappy with how things are going and cost of living and other pressures, that's probably he's been his best argument, the argument for change. Now, you might step back dispassionately and go, well, he's already been president, but that was 3.5 years ago now, and people tend to blame the incumbent if they're unhappy.
Martin, what do you make of the Harris campaign then?
I thought that Harris coming in injected a lot of energy and vitality there, which was lacking. And there's no doubt that the Democrats are in a better situation than they would have been under Biden. And that itself is, she bested Trump in the debate quite clearly, I think, which was quite impressive. I think the one Achilles heel for her is that she's struggled to articulate how she's different from Biden. And she's been pushed on that a number of times. She comes up with a different answer each time, but I don't think she's been able to do that quite as effectively as he would have liked. And that might be a bit of a problem.
If she were to win the election, will she be fighting Congress? Will she be a lame duck president like Obama was in the end when he couldn't get anything through the Congress?
Every president finds it difficult. Barack Obama won two very impressive electoral victories and still found it difficult to get things done. Having said that, Barack Obama did push through Obamacare, which is a very significant health reform in the US. But let's remember, Kamala Harris would be the first ever female president in the US's history. And that itself is an extraordinary, would be an extraordinary achievement. It would so you know it'd be impressive, and she'd come in with a mandate and plenty of enthusiasm, especially as she only took over 100 odd days ago. So, that's quite impressive. Having said that, yeah, the makeup of Congress is still very uncertain. We might come to that a bit later. And if she has a hostile Congress, that makes life quite difficult in terms of getting things done, particularly in terms of domestic policy.
And did I with Trump, do you think, which will shortly come to the likely composition of the Congress, House of Reps and the Senate, but do you think they'd ever want to or go out of their way to restrain Trump, or will they just prove that it's entirely Trump's party and he's the dictator-elect?
I think Trump would still run into plenty of problems. So if he doesn't control both houses, then there's that problem. There's also the fact that even the Republican Party, there are plenty of people that dislike Trump. Some of them have not dared to say it and have kept very quiet. But if he starts trying to do things which are deeply unpopular, expect people on his own side might step in a bit more as well. The Congress will look extremely interesting regardless of who actually wins the presidency.
And what's the likelihood at the moment? What's the voting polling trend showing will happen with the Senate and the reps?
The reps is very much up in the air. Every member of Congress goes to the polls. It is difficult often for an incumbent president to do well in the House of Representatives. And most of the polls seem to suggest that the Republicans will end up again with a majority. They haven't been able to wield that majority very effectively. They've been very divided. We've had lots of all the debates over speakers, etc., in Congress. But that's probably the most likely outcome. The Senate is even more dire for the Democrats and more positive for the Republicans. 19, only a third of the Senate goes up each time. 19 Democrats are going up for re-election and only 11 Republicans. And of those 19 Democrats, that's quite a few in marginal seats. And of the Republicans, there's not really any easy seats for the Democrats to pick up. They're campaigning in Texas, for goodness sake, because that's one of the most marginal seats, Republican Senate seats. I don't think they'll win that. I'd be surprised if they win any seats of in the Senate of the Republicans. And I'd probably be predicting reasonably confidently a narrow Republican victory in the Senate.
Martin, we're getting close to our time, and what are the consequences, do you think, for the world? Trump, Harris, will it be pretty much as is if there's a Harris win? Can we expect big things to change if Trump wins? We keep hearing him on the topic of tariffs, of course.
Look, the local consequences, we just talked about how difficult it is to make a difference local and in domestic policy for presidents. Where US presidents do have some say is in foreign policy, and particularly pitching where the US sits on many things. Ukraine will be extremely interesting. Trump's already said that he doesn't want that war to continue. He's likely to try and cut a deal with Vladimir Putin. What that deal looks like and what it means would be extremely interesting for the future of US-European relations, and also for a lot of other relations, such as, US's relationship with Russia, of course, and many other places. So that will be one of the first places to watch. The Middle East crisis is still going to be there if Trump is elected. What he will do is less clear there. The Republicans generally are very pro-Israel as a party, but I would say Trump is less predictable than many Republican presidents are. He's very uncomfortable about getting too involved in foreign conflicts, very isolationist in that respect. So it'll be interesting to see what he does there in terms of the Middle East. And I think we can confidently predict that he's going to try and put up some tariffs again, which may impact Australia's trade policy.
And Harris?
I think Harris will largely be more of the same. She will have to resolve the Democrat presidency's position on Israel and Palestine and Lebanon. That has been an extremely difficult one for Joe Biden to manage. More difficult, I would say, than Ukraine. They haven't had boots on the ground. They don't have boots on the ground here too, but they're under a lot of pressure because there's obviously pro-Israel sentiments, but there's also a significant Muslim population in the US as well. So it's a really hot button issue, and how she deals with that will be a bit of a defining factor on her foreign policy and indeed her presidency going forward.
Martin, we've reached the moment of truth. You've indicated what you think will happen in the Congress. Hard time for the Democrats. Harris Trump, Trump Harris, who's going to be the declared victor in the presidential election 2024?
I'll start with two polls that we may not have discussed, Michael, to give some context to my prediction, which is not watertight, by the way. One poll said, "Do you like the direction that is that a US is that America's going in?" Two, the polls that say, "Do you think you're better off or worse off than you were 4 years ago?" In both of those things, they said voters consistently, at least two-thirds to one-third, said that they don't like the direction their country is going in, and they don't think they're better off than they were 4 years ago. Under those circumstances, incumbents would find it very hard to be re-elected. And it's for that reason that I think that Harris will struggle to get over the line, and where Trump's in a stronger position. And I suspect if you look at the polls, which have tended to suggest that a lot of this is quite even, and the fact that Trump has done worse in the polls than he's polled on the day, it probably suggests that he's looking a bit better across the key battleground states and a bit better poised to win. Probably narrowly, but to win on Tuesday.
Well, on that basis, I won't ask you for a Melbourne Cup tip, Martin. That'll be obviously close too, but fortunately, it'll be well and truly over by the time we get the US presidential results. Thanks for joining with me today and look forward to seeing you after the event next Friday.
Thank you, Michael.